Welcome to one of the most listened to music news podcasts in the world, SGNP, with your host, Darren Sutherland. Join us as we talk with industry leaders, artists, and entertainers about their faith, family, and careers. This is information you will not find anywhere else on radio, web, or in a magazine, but only firsthand on SGNP.
Miles left to run. Not every day had the storm clouds, not every day sunny skies, but there'll be a day when we'll all look back and maybe then we'll realize. Looking back through the years, turning back every page, God was there all the time, every step of the way. We live by His grace, doing our best, yet we can't help but to worry and fret. When the bills are all due, when the words come up wrong, when the dreams that we have never do come along, but God always works things out for the best. Looking back now, I can see I was blessed. When it's all said and done and the race has been run, I'm gonna wish I had worried less. When it's all said and done and my race has been run, I'm gonna wish I had worried less.
Hey everybody, this is Arthur Rice and you're listening to the Southern Gospel News Podcast. A little bit different this week. Darren is stuck in Atlanta traffic. He called me a while ago and there's horns blowing and brakes are squeaking and all kind of trucks blowing by. So it's going to be a little different. We're talking to Mark Bishop today and Darren will be in here. Hopefully he'll scoot in here in just a few minutes and we'll get him on here. But we're going to go ahead and talk to Mark and just kind of do something a little different this year. Happy New Year, everybody. Man, it's hard to believe it's already 2019. Man, it's just this year, last year, has flown by, and this year is just flying by. So, I'm telling you, it's crazy. But we're glad to have you with us, and we're going to just jump right on in here. Mark, how are you, pal?
Arthur, I'm just doing fantastic, brother. So good to hear from you.
Thank you so much for being on here. You're our first guest for 2019.
And man, how about that? Well, I've got a question for you. Is there ever a good time to drive through Atlanta?
I don't know that there is. I've never been through there at a good time. You come through at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's still crazy.
I think they're full. They should shut it down and start a city someplace else.
Yes, I think so. I think so. Well, did you have a good Christmas and New Year's? And
had a really good break. I know that everybody in our business looks forward to this time of the year. You get to refresh your batteries and spend some time with family, especially with family that you don't normally get to see through the course of the year. I got a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles and nieces and nephews that I don't see. They might get together on the weekends when I'm out singing, but I don't get to see them, you know, so it's good.
You know, that is one of the bad things about traveling is most of the time, you know, you don't, you miss all the weekend times and all that time that, you know, most of the time people get together and friends and family get together. A lot of times you miss those experiences. And so it's great to have that downtime to where you can kind of see everybody. It's great.
The last time that I was off on the weekends, Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy were still on Saturday Night Live and Dan Aykroyd. Are they all still on Saturday Night Live? I don't know.
I don't think
home on a Saturday night
in
30 years or so.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, tell us what's going on in your world.
Well, it's, of course, making gospel music, singing it and creating it and just enjoying being around the people that are associated with gospel music, like you and all the singers, you know, that kind of becomes our family. We were just talking about family, but weekend after weekend, you're with the folks that you're used to singing with. All the other groups were singing here in Alabama or Kentucky or Ohio or Pennsylvania or someplace, and that kind of becomes your extended family to a degree anyway, you know.
Yeah, and really.
So I enjoy that. I enjoy that, and I just enjoy making music with all these talented people, and I still enjoy writing, and I travel and sing every weekend. I don't sing as much as the group used to. I, of course, used to sing with my dad and my brother in our group, the Bishops, for about 17 years, and we were gone 4 days a week, like we mentioned a while ago, every week for those 17 years. But there was like seven of us in the bus and the office and secretary and just had a lot more overhead. Now that it's just me doing solo work, I'll sing 2 or 3 days a week usually.
Yeah. I tell you, you come from a great family and just always thought the world of your dad, your brother, and boy, y'all just super folks. But I've always loved your songwriting. And I don't know, a lot of people may not know this, but Mark, to me, is one of the most extraordinarily gifted songwriters. He's your stuff is different, and I love it. I love the stories that come through your music, and you can tell it's from experience, and I love that, and I know the people enjoy that. It's different.
Well, thank you so much for that. I'm humbled by that, because I know how much music you hear and how much music that you've sung down through the years, and so I'm humbled by that. But I just feel blessed. You know, I write uniquely and differently because I'm ignorant, because I don't know all the musical jargon and vernacular and structure and all of that. And I've just always written from my heart. I just, you know, we sing gospel music, and that's different from any kind of music in the world.
Yeah.
And you write from that experience that you have with the Lord, with your very creator and what he brought you from. And I think that's what people relate to is, the message in the songs, not necessarily the melody and stuff, although they enjoy that, but it's the message. And if you write from your heart, then you can impart that message.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And I think that what makes your music so unique is to me is your it's stuff that people experience every day, and I think that's what it's the people sitting out there when you're listening to it. When I listen to your music, it's like, oh, I know where he's coming from because I experienced that.
Well, isn't it funny how you kind of, when you're creating a song, you're in a little bit of a vacuum. You're working with some other creative people, trying to structure a song and create a message. You know, these songs are like sermons. I tell people all the time that, actually it was an old preacher told me one time, he said, Mark, you know, a Christian songwriter is really just a frustrated preacher. And I thought, well, that's kind of funny. All of our sermons rhyme and last about 4 minutes, you know. But you're kind of in a vacuum writing that song, and then you put it out there, and it may be months or years later that somebody's heard it on the radio and you've moved on. But to them, that message, God is using it in a special way in their life because it speaks to their circumstance.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I love that.
Much like a scripture does. You know, sometimes you'll read a verse in the Bible and, you know, you'll see the profound wisdom in it, but maybe it doesn't strike your heart. And then maybe years later in your journey, something comes along, you know, that changes your circumstances. And all of a sudden, it's very relevant and very pertinent. And that, I believe that's why they called it a live scripture, or the living word, you know, because that scripture comes to life for you.
Hey, listen, Mark, we got to pay some bills. We're going to take just a little bit of a break right here, and then we'll be right back talking to the incredible Mark Bishop right here on the Southern Gospel News Podcast.
Question why Lazarus had died. When she had thus spoken, her doubts were then silenced. He walked toward the body and cried, Lazarus, come forth. Awake like the morning. Arise. Martha stopped crying. Her brother now stood by her side. The Pharisees wondered about what had happened. How could one now live who had died? The reason this story gives hope to so many is although we know
arise with new hope. announcer, and that's the Statesman's leader.
What's that name?
Hobie Lister.
And I crisper, flakier cracker, boys. What's that name?
Premium Saltine.
Ah, you said it, so let's sing it now.
They're better baked and better wrapped.
Premium Saltine.
Nabisco's crackers in the inner sealed pack.
Premium Saltine.
You know, when I think about the Bishops, the first time I saw them was back in the late 80s. And the thing I remember most about the Bishops was all the great songs they introduced to the Southern gospel industry. Songs like Lazarus Come Forth, I'll Live Again, I Need You More Today, He's in the Midst, and For Every Cross There Is a Crown, just great songs. Another thing they did in their personal concerts was they had a segment every concert, and they called it Front Porch Singing. And what they would do is they would take old songs and arrange them and sing them a cappella. And that was a very popular segment that they did, and the fans seemed to really enjoy it. And just a very talented
premium
family.
Premium Saltine.
Nabisco's crackers in the inner sealed pack.
Premium Saltine.
Hey, before I go any further today, I want to thank our sponsor, MyPillow. Not just our sponsor, but our friends, Mike Lindell and the guys at MyPillow. They've been a sponsor of SGNP since we've started. And for the holidays, they've got a great special. They're doing a four-pack offer. That includes two premium MyPillows along with two Go Anywhere pillows plus free shipping. And they're also extending their money-back guarantee through March 1st, 2019. And free shipping is only available for the four-pack offer. So call them today at 1-800-544-8939. 1-800-544-8939 and say, hey, look, I want that MyPillow special offer from SGNP, the four-pack offer. They'll help you out. I sleep on a MyPillow. Jonathan, my producer, has stolen my MyPillow before, so I had to get another one because he dingied it all up. I'm teasing. He didn't. But anyway, 1-800-544-8939. Use the code SGNP so they'll know where you ordered it from, or go online to MyPillow.com and always use the code SGNP.
Hi, this is Taranda. What's wrong with living right anyway?
Hey, you're back with Southern Gospel News Podcast. This is Arthur Reist, your host. And hey, we just got Darren just got off the interstate, and he is back in the hay doing. Val, you caught your breath yet?
You know what, man, and I will tell you this. I have been about 3 weeks before Christmas, Arthur. I got on the scales, and I weighed closer to 300 than I did 200, okay? So I crossed the 250 mark. So yeah. I started going to the gym every day, and this is 2 weeks before Christmas, and I've lost 7 pounds since then. But you know what? And then I ran all over New Orleans, which was a waste of time because I went to see my Bulldogs play. But I am tireder from running in here in Atlanta traffic trying to get here on time to be with you and Mark than I am from all that running on the treadmill and all that running around New Orleans. And, you know, y'all have to forgive me. I did go on Bourbon Street, but I went to Catholic Mass too, and I ain't never done that just because I was at the cathedral. You know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we're glad to have you back here, pal.
Man, I tell you what, now that you've heard my problems, next up.
That's right. Hey, I was just going to ask Mark how his dad was doing, because, man, I think the world of his dad.
Oh, he's doing good. Bless his heart. I was going to tell Darren, people just won't pick up a hitchhiker like they used to, will
they? No, they won't. No, they won't, Mark. No, they won't.
It's a mean world we live in now.
You know what? There was once a day that I could take my shirt off and walk down the road and throw my finger out, and I'd get picked up in a second. Now if I take my shirt off and run down the road, they want to lock me up. I can't figure it out. So anyway. That's the great part about a Southern Gospel podcast. We can talk about anything. Christian radio, 10 people done called and took their donor money away and said, no more. No more.
Well, I met them days. Can you remember? I don't know if you had brothers or sisters, whatever. There was four of us boys, and we used to pile in the station wagon. And on the way to wherever we was going, you couldn't find a seat belt. We would dig the seat belts out of the back seat us four boys, and we might not have our shirts on, and one that we'd always fight to see who got to lay up in the back of the car where the speakers were at.
Oh, yeah.
Back there, blocking the whole back window in that 74 Chevy Chevelle when we was in that. And then we'd pull the seat belts out, and we'd start beating each other with them while we're driving down the road, them buckles. And Dad, Mom and Dad would holler, "Y'all tuck them seat belts back down in there. I'm going to pull this car over and wear y'all out."
And then, Mark, let's just go ahead and tell the truth about it. Then you had the floors didn't have carpet in them. They was that rubber linoleum stuff. You know what I'm saying? And if you were sitting in the back seat, the front seat belts were bolted to the floor. But that plastic that covered that seat belt was always bent up somehow, and you would be barefooted in the back seat, and somehow you would push your foot down on the floorboard, and you would burn your foot. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I didn't realize cars didn't come with cigarette smoke until I was, 12, 13 years old. I just thought them kind of cars were all built with cigarette smoke back in the day. But you know what? We rode in the back of trucks, too, and we all live. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, drunk out of garden hoses. And,
oh my,
that's right.
All that stuff. We used to go to Mom and Dad would take us to Kroger. I'm the oldest of four boys, and they'd go in the Kroger's and leave us out in that hot parking lot in that Chevy Chevelle with the windows down. And there was four boys. I was the oldest, I guess, at about 8 years old, and we was sitting in that hot car for 2 hours while they was in the Kroger getting groceries, and they'd come back out, and of course we were just sweaty and had been wrestling and hollering at people as they'd walk by in the parking lot, and then we'd duck our heads down when they turned around to look and see where we were at.
That's funny.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. talking about a different time, Mark, we're in a different time. We'll just go with this. We're in a different time now in the Christian music world than when you started. What is the biggest difference you notice in the industry now compared to when you started? And I know you started with your brother and your dad, and everybody remembers the great years the Bishops had, and you've had a great solo career going forward. But talking about old times and times now, what's the biggest difference you see?
Well, I mean, just looking back on the whole of gospel music, and I wasn't around for the heyday of it. None of us were, I don't guess, But it's changed and evolved. Of course, the sound changes, from year to year. What was contemporary or progressive 10 years ago is the normal now, and that was the same 10 years ago about the previous 10 years, and it's always been that way.
Right.
So musically, it changes. I don't think that the message has changed at all, and that's as it should be. But if there's one big change, if you had to point out a big change, it's just that our music, what we sing about and what we represent as a belief, as a culture, is that we've moved, or rather the popular culture has just moved away further from us. There was a time when, there were gospel songs that were sung. There were gospel artists on major network TV shows or in the popular culture, or, would represent at a big ball game or something. They weren't afraid to be attached to these artists. Nabisco used to sponsor gospel music on network TV. Now, the popular culture is not going to touch what we do because we're considered radical right wing in our beliefs and our thoughts, and it's expressed in what we sing about. So that's the biggest thing to me, and I didn't think I'd live to see the day that the culture would change as much as it has, but boy, it's just like a mighty river rushing now.
Yeah.
No doubt. Arthur, I just interrupted y'all in front of I interrupted you and just killed the whole show by talking about being in cars with smoke and being in a Catholic church and everything else. But where were y'all at? Let me pick it up from where y'all at before you went in the break.
Well, that just actually just leads in, because I know Mark is a huge Andy Griffith fan.
Yeah.
And I know that we were just talking about that time, and that you're a huge Andy Griffith fan. You love Andy Griffith.
I think everybody in our industry loves Andy Griffith's show. Every night after a concert, we sing four nights a week every week, and whenever the evening was over with, we'd get back on the bus, and this was back in the day of VCRs. I don't even know if we had DVD players, but we'd watch
four or five episodes of the Andy Griffith Show every night, you know, for years. That's the way that Dad wanted to wind down after a concert. And we'd fire it up on the bus and watch those. And all the guys in the band eventually had every line memorized. And whenever we were setting up for a sound check or eating at a restaurant someplace, somebody would say something that would kind of cue the next line, and then we'd go into a whole monologue and reenact the whole episode with the Andy Griffith Show.
That is funny. It's funny. You know, I was actually, y'all gonna think this is crazy. Got home yesterday from New Orleans and flipped on the TV, and Andy Griffith was on there, and the captain from Gilligan's Island, I don't even, whatever his name was, you know, he was on there, and he was going after Thelma Lou, and they was talking about him like he was a big, muscular guy. He wasn't nothing but big and fat like me. You know what I'm saying?
I remember that episode, and Bob Denver, the guy that played Gilligan, was on the episode of the Andy Griffith Show, too. He played Dud Wash. Dud was played by two different actors. You know, there was the real homely-looking fella that Charlene was going to get married to the one time, and then Bob Denver played him the next time.
Yeah.
Mark, how hard was it going from being, and let's make no mistake about this, you were in arguably the first, if we've got a word in gospel music as a megastar, you were in the first megastar trio, basically, in the history of the industry, or one of the first, okay? There may be been some others that came along, but you guys were awesome. How hard was it going from that trio to being up there by yourself? Because when you're by yourself, you've got to do everything. When you were with your dad and Kenny, if you were not having it that night, I'm sure when you walked off the bus, you could look at your brother, look at your dad and say, hey, look, y'all gonna have to pick up the slack. I'm gonna sing my part, but I don't feel like talking, because we all go through that.
Well, first off, we never did feel like megastars, and never did never did think anything. I wish somebody had told us that we were megastars at the time. All we knew is we were busy.
Yeah.
And I think whenever you're, you know, succeeding at what you do, you just get busy. You know,
right.
I don't think that you necessarily know that you're on the top of the heap or at the top of the chart or whatever. You just know that all the things that are going on, the promoters are calling you and want you to come sing at it. And we were grateful for that. And just enjoyed, you know, singing music. We never did. Here's the funny thing about us is we kind of backed into doing this to begin with. We were just singing in our home church back in 1983 and 84 when my granny, who loved listening to us sing, got arthritis so bad she couldn't come to church anymore. Her arthritis had drawn her limbs up, her arms and her legs. And she gave my dad $500 if we would go to a local recording studio and record the songs that we had been singing at church. And so we went over to RCM Records in Winchester, Kentucky, and recorded an album of the hymns that we'd been singing in church. And the fellow that was producing it, he said, well, now with your $500, you get a box of cassettes and a box of albums, 100 each. And I remember my dad telling him, saying, well, we just want one. And he said, it don't work that way. He said, they've got to run at least 100 or something. He said, oh, well, okay. So a couple of months later, we got that box of albums and box of cassettes, and we gave Granny one, and we just gave the rest away. We didn't know that you're supposed to sell them and recoup your money. If somebody come up at the fifth Sunday of the month singing and said, we'd like you singing, we'd say, well, here, take one of these. And we just give them away. But it just so happened a local radio station got a hold of one of those, and he started playing it. And Dave Wilcox was up from Nashville visiting that radio station. I guess they were singing news charting station. And he said, hey, who are you playing on the radio right now? And Jerry Wilson was the DJ. And he said, that's the Bishop family from the next county over. And he got our number and called us up, and he told us about what they were doing at the Eddie Crook Company and Morning Star Records and all that. And he said, would y'all like to come down and record a album in Nashville? And boy, you're talking about a bunch of hillbilly boys that didn't have any business going anywhere. We loaded up the truck and we went to Nashville and recorded an album. And a few months after that, they called and said, well, you've got a song that's charted on the top 40. And we said, which radio station? And he said, all of them. They're all of them. And that's when they told us about the singing news chart and stuff like that. So we kind of backed into it because of the whole reason that we ever began singing was because Granny had arthritis real bad.
That's funny.
And that just grew from that. And we got to sing a bunch of different places, like everybody else does. And I'm grateful that I was able to travel with my dad and my brother all those years.
You wrote "Lazarus, Come Forth." What prompted you?
I didn't write that.
Who did wrote that? I thought you wrote that.
That was Larry Petrie. He came to our church, the Ravenna Church of God, and was holding a revival. And he got up one night and said, "Hey, I just wrote a song a couple of weeks ago, and I want to sing it before I preach." And he started heartbroken, tears falling. Martha found Jesus. And we all looked at each other, and the church fell apart. And we went and asked him if we could record it. And a few weeks later, we recorded it down there in Nashville. And that became our first big hit. Yeah, really. I have people all the time that just assume that I wrote, you know, all of the Bishop's stuff. But a lot of our biggest songs, Dean Danny Kramer wrote "He's in the Midst."
Yeah.
Dee Gaskin wrote for us and different ones. So we had a lot of different writers.
Let me stop you.
Writing, but didn't do all of it.
Mark, I'm going to stop you right there, and I'm going to ask you a tough question, okay?
Go ahead.
If Larry Petrie wrote "Lazarus Comes Forth," okay, how come you let him give Tony Gore and the Wilburn so many other great songs instead of giving them to the Bishops? Because, man, that was...
I figured out his formula, and I started writing them myself. I got a hold of his playbook.
I'm kidding with you. He wrote some great songs back in the day. I mean, with Tony Gore and with the Wilburns. I mean, some great stuff. And with that,
oh, absolutely did.
He kind of became
a staple with the Eddie Crook Company and Chestnut Mound Publishing.
Yeah.
After the Lazarus Come Forth, and he had a really good run because, everybody else wanted the Lazarus Come Forth after that. And I'm grateful for that. And it was the same way with Dee and Danny Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
And a young girl by the name of Dawn Smoot wrote a song for us called "I Need You More Today Than I Did Yesterday." And it was the first song she'd ever written in her life. And she gave it to us on a cassette tape, and that became a good song for us.
Wow.
Front Porch Singing. How'd that come about?
Probably because we didn't play any instruments, to be frank. And we just loved a cappella singing, and we worked on our harmony. I think our harmony was the kind of the thing that set us apart and sets a lot of family groups apart. You know, when a family does 3 or 4 part harmony, they could all go sharp and it just sounds like a cool key change because they all sound like they blended so well. You know, it sounds like a half step up key change or something.
Yeah. The
because family just kind of reads.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about it that just makes the blend, you know, unique, like with the Isaacs whenever they would do it or whenever we would do it or different ones. But we just loved that kind of singing, and it was called that because that's how we learned to sing, was on the front porch. Back then, you know, we didn't have 130 cable TV channels, so we'd sit on the front porch in the evenings and we'd just sing for 2 or 3 hours every night and did that, you know, month after month, year after year. And I guess that's why our harmony kind of got tight, and we loved those old songs. And whenever we would go places, people, that's what they wanted to hear, was some of that front porch singing. So that became a good portion. Every album we ever recorded, we put some a cappella songs on.
No doubt. Arthur, where's the first place you heard the Bishops?
Oh, I guess, I was with the Kingsmen. I guess first time we sang with y'all. And it was probably... gosh, I don't remember. Mark, do you remember the first time we sang with y'all?
Man, there's no telling.
It had to be somewhere in Kentucky.
Where were you? Let's see. One of the first big groups that we ever sang with was when, I'm trying to think of the radio station that was down in Tennessee. We were singing in Lumberton, North Carolina. Maybe it's Fayetteville, North Carolina. Somewhere right around there in a high school gym, and they invited us to come sing with the Kingsmen. And that we were, you know, just out of our minds that we were going to get to travel out of the state of Kentucky and go sing with a big group. And I remember enjoying that, but I can't remember anything other than just remembering that the Kingsmen was one of the first groups we got to sing with, big groups, professional groups.
That was probably it.
That would have been...
84, 85. And, yeah, I remember, because I remember hearing you guys on the radio first, and that was the first thing that stuck out to me was your harmony. You know, and it wasn't bluegrass, but it was just different. And your songs were different, and I loved it. And then when we worked with you, I remember, you know, you guys just nailed it to the wall. I mean, boy, when it comes to singing.
I think there was something kind of blue. There must have been something bluegrassy in our vocals, because for some reason every year, and this continued even, you know, up until the group got off the road in 2001, two or three times a year we'd go sing at bluegrass festivals. We'd get booked to sing someplace, knowing that our band was piano, bass, and drums and a guitar, and we'd wonder, why in the world are we booked at this bluegrass festival, because we're not a bluegrass group. But it mostly was in the front porch singing, when it was just the vocals and the guitar. Something about it must have sounded bluegrassy enough to them to where we'd get scheduled at it. But we never did think that we were a bluegrass group, because we're from Kentucky and we know what a bluegrass group is. It's banjo and upright bass and mandolin and fiddle and all that. But it'd be sacrilege to call the piano, bass, and drums a bluegrass group up here, you know. But for some reason we'd show up and feel out of place.
There you go. Hey, it worked, didn't it? Outside of gospel music, Mark, who's some of your musical influences growing up? I mean, we all listen to something other than Arthur, because Arthur said he got a whooping if he listened to something else. I'm just kidding. But who'd you listen to? who'd you pay attention to?
Well, Arthur sounds like us. You know, we weren't really allowed to listen to anything growing up in church.
Right.
I can remember when me and my brothers, mom and dad, when they'd leave us at the house, when they finally got to where they'd leave us at the house and they'd go into the grocery store, they'd go to town, do whatever, they'd leave us at the house. And then as soon as they pulled out the driveway, one of us would keep watch, and the others would go in, and we'd turn the radio on real loud, and we'd change it over to WKQQ, which was the rock and roll channel. We'd crank the music up real loud and dance all over the house and look through the closets for our Christmas presents and all the stuff we weren't supposed to be doing while they was gone. And then whoever was keeping watch, they whenever mom and dad topped the hill and come over, they said, "Mom and Dad's coming, Mom and Dad's coming." And we'd go and we'd change the channel back to the gospel station, and we'd turn the radio off and act like we've been behaved the whole time.
Yeah. But y'all were Church of God kids anyway, right?
Yeah, we were raised at my very first church experience was the South Urban Pentecostal Church of God.
Okay.
I don't know if I can, you can edit this out if this is not good, but I can remember Steve Malden was producing our first album. For us, and he was trying to learn a little bit about us, and he said, "So you guys are all Church of God, aren't you?" And we said, "Yeah." He said, "I used to love to date Church of God girls." He said, "They weren't allowed to go to the movies. They weren't allowed to go dancing. They couldn't play cards. They couldn't listen to music. All they could do is go park someplace."
we don't have to edit that out if you don't want us to. Hey, we talked to your boss Chris White one time. Okay, we don't have to edit nothing out.
He may have another thought about that.
We grew up in a strict house and weren't supposed to listen to other music and stuff. But, I've never been offended by other kinds of music. A lot of us know people that sing, you know, in secular music, especially, you know, and where we're at in Kentucky, a lot of the bluegrass groups and stuff, Dole Lawson, Quicksilver, and different ones. And some of my friends, they'll sing, you know, secular songs, and as long as there's nothing in it, you know, that's offensive, then right. I don't take offense at it. But I like listening to James Taylor and Paul Simon and more singer-songwritery type acoustic kind of writers. Love listening to bluegrass music when I was growing up. Old country music, I like to listen when I'm driving down the road, sometimes I'll listen to big band music. I love big band music and love listening to 70s music of all kinds and stuff. And then 50s country music, Hank Snow and Hank Williams and
Hank Jr.
All of that. Hank Jr. Well, Hank Jr. was after.
Yeah.
I like a little twang, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't care a whole lot for the new country music stuff. And maybe that's just getting older, that you just don't have an appreciation for new music, period. You know, all the new music, it just it doesn't do anything for me.
You know, when I talk about new music, I try to remember when growing up the independent Baptist kid, my granny didn't care much for drums coming into church, you know, and she thought there was no mm-hmm. place for drums in the church. And basically it was a piano, and when they got a flat-top guitar, the only reason she cared about a flat-top guitar is because somebody she knew, son, was out in the world, and then he got saved and could play a guitar. So they, you know, he rightfully got thrown in the mix because he was so-and-so's son and got to play a guitar. So I think about music today, and I've seen how it's changed and how it's changing and evolving. Mm-hmm. So I'm like you. I don't like the new country, but I'm going to remember and probably – as my kids and your kids, who probably like the new country, gets older, they're not going to like the country they hear now. It's going to be different in 15 years, too. It's all going to be different. It's all going to be different. Saying that, there's been quite a few secular country artists that have crossed over. We talked about Andy Griffith earlier, and a lot of people don't realize Andy Griffith won a Grammy, if I'm not mistaken, for his gospel album. I mean, he sold more mm-hmm. more gospel albums on Channel 17 between Braves games than anybody that'll ever sell. If y'all remember that, I can still remember the commercials, okay? As we see country stars moving more into the gospel arena and cutting gospel albums, okay, and some are stepping out in faith, do you believe that's good for gospel music, Mark? And would you have a problem writing a song for a secular artist to sing a gospel song if you were given the opportunity?
Are you kidding? This is a joke question, right?
No, it's not about,
to me, it's not at all about we need to protect our territory at all. The whole thing is about getting the gospel message out there.
Yeah.
And no matter who is doing it, if somebody's getting up and proclaiming the truth of Jesus Christ and that he went to a cross and built a bridge that we could all go to heaven one day, that's the message that we want out there, isn't it? And it doesn't matter who's doing it. So that's a non-starter for me. I don't see anything at all wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I'd encourage it. I wouldn't discourage it at all. I want somebody here. Let me tell you this quick story that's kind of related to that. When we first started singing, Junior Williams, who's with a bluegrass group now, he's got his own bluegrass group, but he played guitar for our group. Buddy, he can sing and play, a talented young man. And when we first started, he was playing at the Maverick Club up here in Richmond, Kentucky, a bar. And he would alternate. Some weekends he'd go out with us, and then some weekends he would go over to the bar. And people would kind of get on my dad and say, why are you letting that boy play guitar with y'all? You know he's playing at the bars when he's not playing with you. And my dad would always tell him, say, hey, we're working on Junior. The Lord's got something special for Junior, and he's working on him. I want you to know, sure enough, he played with us a few months, and we were singing at a church, and we were given the altar call. And I'm sitting there with my eyes closed, and we're singing. I hear the piano, bass, and the drums, and the guitar. And as we're singing and people are coming to the altar, I hear the guitar drop out. And I'm thinking, well, he's broke a string or he's dropped his pick or something. And I open my eyes and I turn around and look. Well, Junior can't get that guitar off fast enough before he can. He drops that guitar and he falls on this side of the altar and starts just bawling, crying. And he gives his heart to the Lord. And it always amazed me that Junior was saved at his own altar call. He was up there singing and playing with us for other people to come to the Lord, and conviction hit him so hard, he gave his heart to the Lord that night. And if my dad had given up on Junior, that wouldn't have happened.
Nice. Because, you know, I look on the outside. I mean, I sit on the outside looking in, and I'll say this, where Arthur can or where somebody else can't because they're in the industry every day. Sometimes I see some folks that just get downright angry that a country star would have the gall to cut a gospel album and saying, hey, they shouldn't do that. But I'm with you. I mean, the more these guys that proclaim the gospel, it's all about the gospel anyway. And that's what we're up against. I mean, and it's kind of silly, I think. I really do think it's silly. Have you ever been approached by one of the country artists to write a song or pitch a song to them? I'm not going to ask you who it is. I'm not going to ask you who it is, but I mean.
Yeah, I'm trying to. No, not necessarily. Although, yeah, there's a couple of times I can remember a couple of different publishers. There's never been a country artist that's called me, but there's been different publishers that's asked about, hey, would you care if we pitch this to so-and-so? And I won't name any names either. One of them has passed away, and he was kind of a legend in country music. And I had a song that he was getting ready to record on a gospel album a bit before he passed away. And
in other words, you're telling us, Mark, you could have bought a new bus if he had cut it. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
because I heard you say at a concert one time, Lazarus Come Forth paid for a bus. So if it's big,
that song was the song that put us in a bus. That's for sure.
We were
a part time group, and I think we were down at the Quartet Convention in Nashville singing in 1987 when that song came out, and it was a big song for us. And at this time, we didn't have a record contract or booking agency or anything like that. And that song was nominated for something, and we got up and sang it, and the Lord fell, and it was a special moment. And it was Glenn Payne was sitting next to Herman Harper of the Harper Agency, and he leaned over, and this is how Herman Harper told it later. He said, Glenn Payne whispered in my ear after y'all were singing your final note, and everybody was jumping up. He said, if you don't go sign them boys today, somebody else will. And so he met us backstage, and we got a booking agency that day because Lazarus Come Forth, as a matter of fact. I don't know if I ever told Larry Petrie that. Me too.
Nice, nice, nice. Mark, tell us about the solo career. What's going on with it? We got about 4 minutes left, 4 to 5 minutes left. And tell us about what's going on with Mark Bishop by himself. And don't mean that negatively, but about Mark Bishop. We've talked a lot about the Bishops.
No, not at all. It's just that next chapter. You know, life moves along, and you're doing things. It'd be nice if you could just stay in Mayberry all the time, but eventually you graduate high school in Mayberry, and you can move on out into the rest of the world and see what's going on. And that's kind of the way it was, you know, being part of an ensemble with the group, with the Bishops. Whenever the group got off the road in 2001, I was as off the road as the rest of the fellas was. The group disbanded in a disheartening way, and we were all just kind of dejected and sad. And I didn't have any intention of going out either, but I was still writing songs. And it was my wife that came up to me, and she said, honey, don't you think if you're still writing songs, if the Lord's still giving you songs, that you're supposed to be doing something with them? And I called Chris White, who was the record label that we was with when the group got off the road. And he said, yeah, won't you come record us? If you got some songs, let's just come record them. Let's just see what happens. And we recorded it, and the radio kept playing the songs, even though it wasn't the Bishops. It was just me. The radio, you know, kept playing the songs, and that was a blessing. And the Harper Agency got some calls, and they said, well, people still want to book you if you want to go sing. And so I just kind of moved into that next chapter, and it was different. It took me, you know, at least a couple of years to kind of get comfortable with the tempo of a solo presentation is completely different from an ensemble presentation, which is kind of a tag team thing. You know, one person can step up and then they can kind of step back and regroup while somebody else is out front. But when you're a soloist, you've got to vary the tempo, keep it, get it up, get it down, keep it light, get, you know, serious, all of that on your own. So it's like spinning plates in the air, really.
It is. I remember my first solo concert after I left the Kingsman. It'd been over a year, and I went out and did my first date. I only had 10 songs. Well, 25 minutes, and I was done. You know, and I'd sung every song I knew, you know. And then the pastor got up and he said, well, you still got stuff to do, and I just had to pull stuff out of my hat and sit down to be. I didn't know what to do. I was like, yeah, I know what you mean. I know you've done all you know and said everything you can say.
No doubt.
It's a completely different animal. Yeah. It's a different, a totally different presentation. But I think that's why I do so many story type songs, is because pretty quickly I can make people forget that it's just one person up there. And if they might come to a typical gospel concert to hear the harmony or something, you know, the high part of the tenor, the low part of the bass or whatever, and they're not just not going to get that with me because that's not my presentation. But if I can sing these stories about these Bible characters and make those come to life, well, pretty soon I've got a whole cast of characters up on the stage, you know, and it's not just me. Yeah. And they forget, you know, they forget that it's just one guy up there singing to them. They're immersed in what's being said, which is, you know, what I want to work on anyway.
You paint a brilliant picture with your songs. I will say that for you. As you're singing and the ones you wrote, you paint a brilliant, brilliant picture. Mark, I'm going to ask you a question. We can edit it out if you want us to. And I mean this in all seriousness. If you don't want to answer, you don't have to. But I'll get 100 emails if I don't ask this question. How is Kenny?
Well, Kenny's working in politics up here in Kentucky now.
Okay.
My dad pastors a church. Everybody, you know, everybody's doing different things. But even when the group was on the road, Kenny had us involved in, he was always involved in state politics back mm-hmm. then. And he would volunteer us to go sing the national anthem or God Bless America at this rally or this breakfast or whatever. And it kind of aggravated Dad because we were singing 4 days a week anyway. And then Kenny would say, hey, guys, we're going to go sing Tuesday up here for, you know, Senator whoever. And Dad would say, Dad always called these exposure dates, you know, because you weren't getting paid anything to go do them. Dad would say, son, how many more of these exposure dates do we have to do? We're already singing more than we want to.
That's hilarious.
And so we'd go up there and sing, you know. So when the group got off the road, when the group disbanded, Kenny kind of already had a direction that he was going to go in, other than singing. And so he went up with our first Republican governor in Kentucky in 40 years, Ernie Fletcher, who's a good conservative guy. And he's been up. Ernie Fletcher's gone now, but Kenny's still up at the Capitol doing stuff. I think he's actually in Lexington now working for the mayor of Lexington. So he kind of goes from one thing to another in politics doing that. He enjoys that, got a gift for that. And then my dad, he's pastoring a little country church, which was one of the very first churches that he attended when he was a young boy. He feels like he's kind of come full circle. He preached to us boys all those years. It's about time somebody else heard it, I guess.
I know during your homecoming, y'all will do a song or two together. Will we ever see a Bishop's Reunion tour?
Boy, I don't know. I've had promoters ask about that. I mean, there's still disagreements on some things between the three of us that I don't know if we can reconcile or not. I would hope to. I would love to. And I think about it all the time, you know, that it would be great if we could just get together just to sing the songs for old time's sake. But there's also other things attached to it from the outside that, you know, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings, or you don't want to do anything that would, you know, stir the pot. And I'd be afraid that some things might stir the pot.
But, I understand.
I don't know if we would ever. I would hope that we would, and maybe one of these days we will.
Well, you know what? It's like Isaiah 55:8 says, my thoughts aren't your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, saith the Lord. So you never know what's going to happen. But, Mark, you've been a blessing to us all for so many years. Arthur, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And just
we need him.
I appreciate the fellow. I appreciate Arthur. I tell you, he sung on so many of my solo albums. To fill him out, and just a brilliant, not just a singer and a great person, man, he's a great producer and just hears music in such a spectacular way. So I'm always tickled whenever he's a part of, whenever I'm making a new album. So I appreciate him doing that.
Well, I've seen him on stage a number of times, and I've watched Arthur on video a number of times. And Mark, one thing you need to teach him how to do a little bit better. You remember,
what's that?
You remember talking earlier about when Mom and Dad would leave and y'all would turn rock and roll on and y'all would dance around because y'all learned to do that in the Pentecostal church. I've seen Arthur try to move a little bit on the stage sometimes. And he comes from that staunch Baptist, Southern Baptist stuff. You might want to get him moving a little bit better. Could you do that? I'm teasing. Y'all know I'm messing with.
Maybe we'll try to teach. I can remember one time we was on stage and Junior was playing a hot
guitar turnaround, and he went for probably 32 bar turnaround. And so it was a long old turnaround anyway. So I started moonwalking on the stage was real slick, and my shoes were slick. So I started moonwalking on the stage, and when that song was over, of course, Dad had his microphone up to where everybody could hear him, and he said, "Son, what do they call that move?" And everybody was dancing. I said, "That's called the moonwalk, Dad." And he said, "It looks like backsliding to me."
God didn't put praying knees and dancing feet on the same ledge, is what my granny said. Mark, tell us where they can find you online, my friend, and how they can get your products.
Well, they can go check out markbishopmusic.com, and then all the links to the different social media is on there, and they can see our schedule. We've got a schedule that they can subscribe to, an email newsletter list. Of course, they can find us on Facebook at Mark Bishop Music and all that stuff.
Fun, fun. Mark, it's been our pleasure. Arthur, thank you for filling in for me while I was gone, man.
Oh, yeah. Glad to.
Now when we get notes that says Darren needs to be gone more because I don't like hearing what he has to say, leave Arthur there. You know, I'm going to feel real bad. You know that?
I think you're safe. I told Mark, I just usually just nod.
Oh, man. Well, just so y'all will know, I ain't even told you this, I don't think, Arthur. We go on Atlanta Radio actually this Saturday. It'll be our first Saturday on Atlanta Radio. They're running this show, so it'll be like the fifth station that's picked us up. So,
that's good.
Pretty good. Some folks that just said we're going to start a podcast. Next thing you know, well, Mark, it's been a pleasure having you here, my friend, and look forward to talking to you again in 2019. And we'll do it again sometime. Let us know when something big's going on with Mark Bishop. Will you do that?
Well, I appreciate you, fellas, and I appreciate your spirit and talking about this greatest music in the world.
It's no doubt, and I love what you said. It's all about the gospel. Let's get it out there because there's a lot of hurting people,
Absolutely.
All right.
That's it.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon. Hey, if you want to find out more about us, go to our Facebook page, Southern Gospel News Podcast. That's Southern Gospel News Podcast. Join about 9,500 of your favorite friends. Or you can go to our Instagram page, or you can always call us on our Google line, 615-763-3862. You've been listening to Darren Sutherland, Arthur Rice, and our guest this week, Mark Bishop, on SGNP. Tell your friends about us, subscribe to the podcast, and leave your remarks in the remarks section. We appreciate you and we love you.
He's in the midst of our storm. He's in the valley we walk through. Where two or three are gathered in his name, he'll be there too. When you feel so all alone, he is standing next to you. He's with us now. Walked ahead of you, and every night as you lay down, angels are camping all around. I'll never be alone, for he is in the midst. He's in the midst of our storm. He's in the valley we walk through. Where two or three are gathered in his name, he'll be there too. When you feel so all alone, he is standing next to you. He's with us now. And all their chains just fell away.
SGMP is excited you chose to listen today. If you'd kindly leave a remark and rating in the podcast remarks section, we surely would appreciate it. Please share with a friend or family member. Look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and our new website, SouthernGospelNewsPodcast.com. To advertise your products, services, concert event, or new project on SGNP and reach a 100% guaranteed number of people in your area, call Tim Newton at 770-874-3200 or email him today, tnewton@bgadgroup.com. Let us geo-target our ads for you, something radio nor magazine can do.
Hey, this is Darren Sutherland. Before I close, I want to thank our affiliates out there, WLJA in North Georgia, KWFC in Springdale, Arkansas, the new one, The Andrew Burnett Show, heard all across the country, and online, thelightatlanta.com, playing Southern gospel music online. We're adding affiliates every day. We're partnering with Ken and the folks over there at Gospel Music TV real soon, so we look forward to that partnership. If your gospel music entity would love to partner with SGMP, get a hold of us. It's real simple. Folks, here's the deal. We've reached out to literally every form of media in gospel music. If we've missed you, I'm sorry. But we've had great partnerships with folks like Paul Heil and others. If you haven't heard someone on the air, it's not because we hadn't reached out. We hope everyone is successful, no matter if they're a radio station, a magazine, a website, a group, whomever it is. God bless you, and let's make gospel music better than it was today, tomorrow. Easy enough?
The following ad contains shocking material. Listener discretion is advised. Is someone in your family playing a dangerous game of Russian roulette? Over 43,000 people die a year from drug overdose. 120 people a day. 5 people every hour. 1 person every 12 minutes. 88,000 people die every year from alcohol abuse. Over 240 people a day. 10 an hour. 1 person every 6 minutes. Somebody you know may be next. Learn how to help someone you love get away from the drugs, alcohol, and bad influences. With the FMLA, people can take a leave of absence from their job and still keep it.
800-980-1761. 800-980-1761. 800-980-1761. That's 800-980-1761.